Welcome to the Elevate Effect, the official podcast of Cedar Hill, Texas. I am your host, Mayor Stephen Mason. As the highest point from the Red River to the Gulf of Mexico, our thriving city is elevated in more ways than one. We will have great conversations with thought leaders and change makers, answer community questions submitted by you, and share important city happenings. Now, we are live from the Poetic Justice Studio at the Trafine Hickman Library in 3, 2, 1.
And a lot of things that I hear from people is, I just don't have the time. But Oprah gets the same amount of time. Beyonce has the same 24 hours. Time is literally the only level playing field that everybody has.
Welcome back, everyone. And thanks for tuning in to the Elevate Effect. I am especially excited for this episode because I am joined by two incredible leaders, my friends, who, like me, were born and raised and serve in the communities that they are grew up in. With us today, we have Mayor Rachel Proctor of DeSoto, Texas. Mayor Proctor is known by her community as a dynamic leader and a public servant. Her work goes beyond politics, too. She is a two-time published author and provides events, programs, and mentorship to help women entrepreneurs get their start. Her passion for health and wellness also led her into opening Salata Salad Kitchen, bringing more healthy food options to her community. Also, I am thrilled to welcome State Representative Toni Rose. She represents the 110th District, which includes the communities of Oak Cliff, Pleasant Grove, Balk Springs, here in Dallas County. Her legislative focus includes important issues like mental health reform, access to affordable health care, and criminal justice reform. In 2023, she was recognized as the most influential woman in Texas House by the Texas Tribune. Ladies, thank you for joining me here in Elevate Effect. Welcome to Poetic Justice Studios. So tell me, and I'll start with you, Representative Rose, what is something unexpected that you have learned about yourself since stepping into public office?
Something unexpected. Well, to be honest, I never expected to be in a political office. After I got elected, I was like, what have I done? Because, you know, sometimes, you know, when you don't know, when you think of elected officials, you're thinking of someone who's, you know, and I've been around elected officials all my life. But after I got elected, I was like, oh, what have I done? I'm going down here with all these smart attorneys, these businessmen, and once I got to the Texas House, it didn't take long to be like, what in the world are they doing here? Because, you know, my experiences come from a frontline worker, especially as it relates to mental health. And so what I found is a lot of my colleagues, although they were making decisions about mental health, they had no clue. But they had the capabilities of being elected to come to the Texas House.
And we're going to dive a little deeper on mental health a little bit, you know, further on. But Mayor Proctor, same question for you. What is something unexpected that you have learned since you have served in public office?
Well, I'm kind of like Rep Rose. I didn't really anticipate it was never a goal of mine. I tell people all the time, I wanted to be an architect growing up. So I'm not sure how I found myself in this vein, but it was one of the things that, again, it's kind of been a pleasant surprise. Let me put it that way, to find out that I really did have such a passion for government and such a passion for leadership in this particular arena. My dad was a pastor and a businessman, so we didn't really talk about politics at all growing up. The most I say is we talked Jesus was our president, right? That was the conversations and how they revolved in our house. And so really understanding that I really had a passion for it and desire to do it. Last year made 10 years since I took my first oath of office. I'm not sure where the time went. So just being in it and really not ever having imagined that for myself, I'm kind of like you, Rep Rose. When I got in, I never really saw myself as city council or even as the mayor for sure, because I always felt like it was those people up there that it always seemed just something that was unattainable for me. And so to be in this position has been one of the most rewarding experiences I've had. And so sometimes I do have to pinch myself to when I think about where I'm at and the things that I've been able to do.
And you picked up the courage to run for mayor what year?
2019, I ran that year. I didn't win, wasn't successful that year. Okay. And one of the things I learned is sometimes you're supposed to do something, but it's not for the reason you think you're supposed to do it.
Yeah.
And so it was a learning lesson for me. And it has been one that has really strengthened my character and really strengthened my resolve, because it's nothing like taking a public loss, because you can never say it didn't happen, because it's a part of history now. But being able to do that, and then, like I said, just kind of going on. And I think the next year after that was the pandemic. And so it really, like I said, kind of strengthened my resolve and really reinforced to me why I was doing it at that point. So when the opportunity came back around, I really had a different mindset and a different posture going into it the second time around.
So, and I meant to mention the parallel lives. You also played basketball for your high school team.
I
played basketball on my team. You never challenged me in a game of basketball, but I understand why. Who would want to challenge me, right? But I got the microphones myself. So
right, it's your podcast. I'll let you make it today.
But, going back to what you were just saying, tell us about the pivotal moment that made you realize and that you wanted to dedicate your life to serving your community.
I will say, so again, I really had no thoughts about it, but I left DeSoto. I graduated, went off to college, came back, and I actually bought my first house in DeSoto. And I was very young. Although I'm glad I made the decision, I remember getting my first tax bill in the mail. Mm. And if you know anything about it, if you've ever gotten one of those, especially with DeSoto, it's a nice little luxury tax. And so I remember thinking, where is this money going? Right.
Who's FICA?
Who's all these people, right? And so I started getting involved, started at the very base level, started getting involved with my HOA. Then I decided to give back to my alma mater. So I started getting very involved in the school district and things that were going on there. And then I decided to actually run for school board. I made the decision. I was like, oh, it's low hanging fruit, because it felt attainable. And I graduated from DeSoto, so why not? Right. And I remember picking up my packet, I think it was a Wednesday, and I sat it in my passenger side seat. And I said, I'm going to work on this and I'm going to fill it out over the weekend. Well, that Friday night of that same week, I actually went to a gala, and the then mayor, Carl Sherman, who we all know, he had spoke to me at the gala, and he was like, have you ever thought about running for city council? And I was like, well, no, that's something that I don't really feel like is for me. And anyway, I'm going to run for school board. I have my packet, all these things. And so he said, well, there's a special election that's coming up because one of our council members is stepping down, and I just want you to think about it. It may be something that you may be interested in, And so I was like, well, no, I don't think so, because I don't even know if I live in the district anyway. All these excuses that I was giving myself for not even giving it a chance. And so that weekend, I just couldn't shake it. And I'm like, well, I don't even know if I live in the district, or, so I just started investigating. Come to find out, they had done redistricting the year before. And where I lived at, literally, they had drew me into the district the year before. And so I was like, okay, God, if I see you're trying to let me know, you're trying to throw me a bone. So I ended up actually running that year and actually getting unopposed that particular year. And then I had to run. I was opposed the year after that because it was a special election. So I was just filling an unexpired term. And so the rest is history. Even as a council person, I didn't really ever see myself being the mayor, right? I had no idea what I was doing. I think we can all testify. Sometimes you think you know what you're getting into, but it takes getting in there and actually just seeing what is all happening before you realize how much you don't know. But my desire, I think, to your question, in terms of knowing I wanted to dedicate my life to it and just dedicate time to it, because we dedicate a significant amount of time, was my hunger for learning about it and wanting to be good at the job. I didn't want to just do it for the sake of doing it. I wanted to be good at it. And so really just learning and understanding the community and understanding how to be good at the job let me know that it was something I wanted to dedicate myself to.
Yeah. And, personally, I'm glad you did. What's even cool is that you're serving mayor at the same time as I am. I seen your growth. You seen mine. And I'm sure DeSoto really appreciate, your leadership. Representative Rose, did I say it right? Is it the sixth term, or are you getting sworn in? Is this your sixth term? Wow. So I met you your first year. So I've known you about 12 years now. So, yeah. So, wow, this time has really flown. So you are a very influential voice in the Texas House. What inspired you to pursue a career in public service? And you may have already touched on that a little bit, but what drives your passion for the communities you represent?
Well, to be honest, okay, I have to tell this story.
Sure.
So, well, it's not a story, but it's part of my testimony.
Okay.
My last year of college. So my parents had three kids. And in my last year of college, my brother was murdered on November the 13th. And my sister died in a car accident December the 13th. So my parents had three kids. Two of them died within 1 month of each other. And so I was the only one left. And so it made me look at my life differently. I had already been involved with community service through my sorority. And, you know, and I just kind of really, you know, just started, you know, expanding my community service through other avenues with the League of Women Voters, the NAACP. And one thing about Dallas, when people see you're committed to something, other people start asking you to do things. And so then my council member asked me to serve on the Planning Zoning Commission. So I served on the Planning Zoning Commission. I served on the Judicial Nominating Commission, the Martin Luther King Board. So one of the things, you know, and so it just became my passion. I wasn't doing it with the intent to run for office because people would say, you need to run for office. But it just became a passion of mine. And so I really look at my life, you know, through my pain, I found my passion, which has led me to my purpose. And so that's why I feel like, you know, I have been able to be successful because being a state representative doesn't make me. I was somebody before I became a state representative. So when I walk the halls of the Capitol, I know I'm there for purpose.
I hope that the takeaway from your testimony is that you are a servant leader, not a public servant. A lot of people will want to get into your office and do it reactively. Something happened to me and now I want to run for office or I want to go and change it. Versus I just want to serve my community organically. I want to be able to give my heart and give everything I want into my community. So I hope what I took away from that. You know, one of the cool things about you, Representative Rose, is the fact that, you know, I asked, you know, what inspired you for your community. But do you feel like you are a 110 representative or do you feel like, you know, the North Texas region you represent, the whole state of Texas? I know when I go down to Austin, you're one of the, you know, friendly faces that I want to meet when I go down and meet with my representatives. What would you say to that?
Well, I know that I represent my constituents, but I feel that all legislators, everyone who's serving the Texas legislature, we make decisions for the entire state. We don't just make them for our districts. And so the work that I do, it doesn't just impact those persons who live in my district, they impact the whole state of Texas. For example, this past legislative session, I was able to pass a bill that expanded Medicaid services for pregnant mothers from 2 months to a full year, which, you know, which impacted the Black maternal health crisis that we were having. Women were dying at alarming rates. And so now, instead of women, you know, just having those 2 months of services, they're able to receive it for a full year. So that doesn't just impact the women in District 110. That impacts the whole state. So I don't feel like I just represent the whole state. I mean, my district, I represent the whole state. Like we were talking earlier, you was given the area that I cover or the constituents who elected me. Mm-hmm. But I know that my obligation is not just to them. Because like I said, whenever we make a decision, we make it for the whole state. And a lot of times I'm arguing with them. It's not a one-size-fits-all state either. Every area have different issues.
Right. So I think a lot of times the general population really don't know how the state legislature work. A lot of times people would think, they down in Austin, I'm just going to stay here. I'm going to wait till I vote again. But should you encourage constituents to go down to Austin? If so, how many times? When is the best time to do so? Do you have a recommendation for that?
Well, you know, first of all, to me, all politics is local. But I think it's important that, you know, constituents come to the Texas Capitol. In fact, you know, I've hosted Red and White Day at the Capitol for my sorority sisters with Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated. Every year we have a Paul Quinn Day at the Capitol. And then also when we have our Texas Legislative Black Caucus Summit, that's when I have my constituents to come down. So to be able to experience the legislative process, because that is something a lot of people don't understand, everything that we do. You know, people call my office for everything, things that don't even pertain to what I do. A lot of it has to do with the city. But what I tell my staff is, instead of us saying, well, you need to call the city, what we do is we contact the city for that individual. So they won't feel like we just putting them off. And a lot of times when we call the city, then they're probably more likely to get their issue, you know, handled, because of the fact that we reached out to the city ourselves.
Yeah. Again, thank you for what you do. Mayor Proctor, you wear many hats. You're an author of two books. That's new to me. I know you did one. I didn't know you did two already. But before we get into that, politics is local. Do you agree with that? And if so, tell us what is something that you have seen as a major impact as you're serving as mayor.
So I do agree with that all politics are local. I do believe that I always try to encourage my constituents to get active on the local level, meaning truly within the city that you live in, because the decisions that we make, while the state legislature, they do impact you, the things that we as your city council and your mayor will decide for you can impact you the same day or the very next day. You know, we're dealing with your amenities, your water, your trash, all of those, your police, your fire, all the things that you immediately and readily need accessible as a resident of that particular city. So I definitely agree that all politics are local, and that people should get involved on the local level. And you all probably know this. It seems like the local elections are some of the most unengaged. Now, I guess voting in general could stand to be beefed up all over the place. But especially our local elections, we really struggle to get people out to the polls. And people don't really show up to our meetings unless it's something that has impacted them directly. Then they show up when they have an issue with something. But just trying to get people to get engaged, whether they're serving on a board or a commission or volunteering in the schools or volunteering at the senior center or picking up trash on your street or adopting a street, different things like that that can get you engaged, even on the most granular level, is important. And it's something that I try to encourage people to do.
You know, let me just add something to that. One of the things I try to tell people, we have to equate voting and politics and government, all that, to everyday life. Because a lot of people don't understand, you know, government and don't understand what it is that we do. Like, for instance, they think that we're just elected officials that's, you know, want to get paid. I tell people every day, listen, we get paid $7,200 a year, which is $600 a month, which equals $19.22 a day. Yeah. So I'm not, you know, I don't get paid. I mean, this was really a huge sacrifice for me, right? Because I gave up a career that I really love. Because, again, I had the audacity to believe that I could do something to better my community. Yeah. And so, but we have to equate voting to everyday life, you know, and I try to tell. And when I say voting, I'm not necessarily talking about, it's just because voting controls everything. Politics, you know, controls everything. People say, I don't do politics. And I tell them all the time, you don't do politics, but politics will do you. Yeah. And so, but we have to equate government services, you know, everything, the street, you know, the potholes, the streets you drive on, the water you drink, all of that is government and all of that is political. And so I just wanted to throw that little bit.
Thank you for doing that. So, you know, you have two books. Real quickly, can you tell us about the two books that you authored? Is that okay?
Sure. Yeah. No, I wrote two books. So I authored my very first book, which was my Your Best Year Ever, 12 Steps to Help You Make This a Year to Remember. Then I have my To Achieve List, which is an action guide, and it's a journal. It's more like a workbook to help people to be able to take a new look on how we spend our time. I'm big on, you know, I do a lot of business coaching because I'm an entrepreneur by trade in terms of what I do every day. And a lot of things that I hear from people is I just don't have the time. But Oprah gets the same amount of time. Beyonce has the same 24 hours. Time is literally the only level playing field that everybody has. And so it's about learning how to plan your days out. And sometimes we think, oh, I'm going to set my goals for the year. But you have to literally set goals all the way down to the very hour. Yeah. And how you're going to spend your time. Time is just like a budget. You have to tell it where to do. Just like you allocate your dollars for your money, you have to allocate your time in the same way. Also looking at how to create margin in your day for life to happen. Right. You can't just pack your whole day full of goal setting things. And then when life happens, your whole plan is derailed for the day. So looking at how to create not even really balance, but more so a rhythm throughout your day to be able to balance life happening versus actually moving yourself towards your goals.
I'm a dig a little deeper again. Sure. I mean, both y'all have accomplished a lot. There's an entrepreneurship, you know, journey that you are on right now. Could you tell us about that? And also, is there a why? Is there a why that you chose this entity to partner with?
Sure. So my journey is one of that. I've never worked in corporate America. I have no frame of reference for it. So again, I mentioned my dad was a pastor. He was a businessman. And so he's always had businesses. So we actually still have a learning center in the city of Dallas in the Oak Cliff area that's been in business for over 30 years. My sister and I took over as co-owners around 2009 when my dad started to get sick. So we've always either worked in the family business or had entities of our own that we've always worked with. And so entrepreneurship is really all I know. And it's that I really, really love. And so for me, when I was looking at what business I wanted to start next and what I wanted to do next, because as entrepreneurs, we're always kind of thinking ahead to what's the next thing. In 2017, it's my lifestyle. So it's really organic to me. But I wanted to start a salad bar. I wanted to do a concept and I'm kind of pinching myself now because Salad and Go actually took my concept. So that's what they say. When you don't act on it and you don't move on, it's somebody else to take the idea. Mm-hmm. Right. So it was actually very similar to what Salad and Go is doing now. And that was around 2017. I remember getting with TRG, which is the restaurant group. We were working on a concept and it just became so overwhelming for me because, again, I've not been in the restaurant business, but I'm always willing to explore and learn. And so I kind of put it on the back burner. And then in 2022, I just kind of woke up one day and had this itch. And I said, you know what? I want to pick my dream up of doing a salad concept. And so my brother and I were talking. He was like, well, why don't you just do a franchise? You know, that's easy. You can go in, you can do the systems. You're familiar with how franchises run. So just look for a good franchise. So I started looking around and came back to some place that I eat all the time and never really dawned on me until T mentioned that, which was Salada. And so I just started exploring. I just started getting into it, called their business development manager and got the ball rolling. And so last month, actually, we opened up our first location. And so I have an area development agreement for three. And so we just opened up our first location in Midlothian. And so we're working on our next two now. And so it's been a learning journey, but it's been incredible. What I love about being able to have this particular business is that I'm proud of what we're able to bring to the community and proud of what we're able to serve and feel good about the food that we're serving. I don't think that when people say your communities are a food desert, I don't think we're a food desert because we have access to food. I do think we are a healthy food desert. We don't have access to a lot of the healthier foods to make it easier for people to have access to quality foods and things that are going to do their bodies good. And so to be able to bring it to our communities has been a great feeling for me.
I like that. I was hoping that the why has something to do with healthy food desert. So you hit that. And I don't want you to leave out of here without knowing that Cedar Hill is open for business. I know you said that you had three locations. I just want to put
duly
it out
noted.
There. So something that you have influenced me was a mental health reform. We had a lot of talks before I became mayor. You may not know that I was listening and paying attention, but once I became mayor, I was able to be able to see things in a different lens, because as mayor, we're seeing the reports, we're actually seeing how things actually led up to a lot of the cases that we have seen. So it was important to me to be able to find some sort of an outlet for our public safety.
to be able to go and have a mental health check or mental health counseling or something of that nature. Well, we have that now here in Cedar Hill, and it's a regional program. So I don't know if you're aware of that right now, but regionally, we are trying to make mental health cool. In order for you to be able to take the lead on a legislative level, what personal experiences or encounters have driven your passion for this cause?
You know, I believe it was my professional career. Once my colleague, you know, was like, what better way to impact mental health? I just started thinking of the things that I could do. And so one of my goals when I became a legislator was to always try to work to get more hospital beds for patients who needed services. And I actually did better than that. I was able to secure funding to build a new hospital here in Dallas. It's going to be for the North Texas region, and it's called the North Texas Behavioral Health Center at UT Southwestern. And so it's in the process. If you go down, it's right on the corner of Harry Hines mm-hmm. and Medical City. Medical Center? District. Yeah, Medical District, mm-hmm. Right at the corner. You know, I've had some great accomplishments, but I think that one is really, you know, really heartfelt, because working in the jail, seeing patients who really are individuals who did not need to be in the jail setting. Mm. You know, when I pass by there, yeah. I just kind of almost tear up, because I know that the benefits of that facility being here in Dallas County is going to really serve a lot of people.
Is that the pediatric hospital?
No, they have a pediatric wing, but they're going to do a pediatric wing over in the mental health hospital. Wow. I think the pediatric hospital is just, you know, for children with, yeah. you know, medical issues. But this is going to help with their mental health issues.
Wow. So if I heard you correctly, you just wanted more beds and you got a whole new building. Yeah. I mean, I don't want that to just go by very easily. That's a major accomplishment. Kudos to you, Representative Rose.
Thank you. Thank
Great
you.
Great work. Mayor Proctor, there's an initiative that I'm aware of. You probably have many initiatives since you have served as mayor, and I believe this is something that you have started, but I'm aware that you have this First Lady Brunch initiative. Yes. You kind of want to tell us a little bit about that? You smiling. I don't know why you smiling about that, but this is huge. What's going on in DeSoto?
So really, we wanted to have an event to where we were looking at what we could do in honor of Breast Cancer Awareness Month, but it was also an event to kind of merge with our faith community. And so we have our faith leaders breakfast, which we host every quarter. So it gives our faith leaders. So that's if you are a faith leader that lives in DeSoto or a faith leader that has a house of worship in DeSoto, you're invited to come to those breakfasts to network and to talk to other faith leaders to see what they're doing and how we can support one another, but also to find out what's actually happening in your city, because obviously these things impact your parishioners. And so we wanted to give the faith leaders a chance to come together, but there was nothing really for their wives and for the ladies, right? And so we do this brunch. This past one that we did will be our third year doing it. And it's in honor of Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And it's a chance to give everybody a time to come look cute. Our theme is always hats and flats. So the ladies always have on their beautiful pink and their hats and their flats. But really more so than that, it's a chance for us to come together and really become educated and really be a support system and really to honor our survivors and then honor the legacy of the ones that won their battle with cancer. And so each year we have, we partnered with Methodist Charlton, and this year we had a panel of doctors to come out, and they were actually able to just answer questions and talk with the ladies. Many of them even talked offline if they were not comfortable with asking their questions publicly, but it was really a time for us to get together and have a wonderful meal and break bread, but also to be able to educate ourselves and further understand ways again that we can support support those that are in the community that are dealing with bread. Breast cancer and any type of cancer, really, but primarily breast cancer for the month of October.
Well, I thank you for being so inclusive because your initiative is not really focused only on the city of DeSoto, right. But you have actually reached out to the region. Thank you for doing that. We need more awareness about it. We have friends, loved ones that we care about has been impacted by breast cancer. So I appreciate you stepping outside the box and doing something special.
Sure, like yeah. And so I want to make sure that we understand that when we say first ladies, we also have included the first ladies of each of our neighboring cities. So we have a lot of them come out. Your wife is always, I think she's been with me every year since we started doing it. So it's a time to really come together and really just support one another. And we always have a great time.
Yeah. 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 I'm aware because I got to, pick out these hats every year. Before we wrap up, I just want to kind of just touch on, we talked about mental health. We all have, public quality of life in our communities. So we have parks, we have trails. Are there anything that we want to kind of just highlight, as far as what goes on into your community, any parks and trails that you might entertain or maybe, walk through there in order to clear your mind? Or maybe is there a park or trail that you're proud of? Is there something you want to kind of just share with us, Mayor Proctor?
I will say two things. One that I love that I always use personally, and then one that is on the way. So the first one is we have a nature preserve, and we recently, probably in the last year or so, renamed it after the individual in our community who is actually really, I won't say single-handedly, but primarily responsible for it even being there. And that is the Paul Dreyer Nature Preserve that we have in DeSoto. It was actually a failed subdivision. And so he really took a lot of time to do the work to really make it into what it is today. So it's just a great place. If you are a hiker, or if you like to walk or just explore nature, it is the place in DeSoto to be able to do that. The second thing that I'm very proud of that is on the way is the aquatic center that we're having. And we recently revised that particular project to include an Olympic size pool, which will actually open up an incredible amount of possibilities in terms of what can be drawn there, types of events we can host there. And so I think it'll be transformative, not only just for the city of DeSoto, but for our region. It will be one of a kind. There's not anything like it, I would say, in the southern sector for sure. And so it's going to be not only just the aquatic center, but it will have the competition pool, but it will also have the leisure pool. We'll have different things in terms of fitness, which is a big deal for me in terms of making sure that we're an active community. And so it'll have lots of those features and initiatives and party rooms and just all kinds of things that our community is so excited about. This is a long time coming. We've been talking about this for over a decade. Mm. And so I'm glad to be able to be a part of the council that finally was able to get it across the finish line. And so we broke ground a few months ago, and we're moving along. And so I'm always so excited to go through there and just see the progress that they're making on that project.
Very exciting. I'm assuming there's a exclusive mayor pass that gets excited. Get access to this Olympic
No,
size
I haven't
pool.
Heard that, but we can work on it for you.
All right, cool. No pressure, of course. Representative Rose, you have something in your community you want to talk about?
Absolutely. Back in 22, we broke ground on a park in my community that's going to be named, it is named after my father. My father passed in 2019, and when I came home from my father's funeral services, my colleagues got together and they allocated funding to do a park in honor of my dad. Mm. And so I remember when I found out about it, I called Councilman Atkins, who was like, hey, my dad, they've given us, they're allocating these funds to do a park in honor of my dad. And it has to be in Highland Hills. It can't be anywhere but Highland Hills. We need to find some land. And he said, hey, we're already working with Trust for Public Land to do a park. You just need to, join us. And it could be named the Judge Charles Rose Park. And so what turned out to be an allocation of $1 million is now turned into a $15 million park, which is 40 acres. Mm-hmm. They've started on the first phase, which is going to be completed next spring. And it's going to include a pavilion, of course, playground, an outdoor classroom. It's going to have Wi-Fi that's going to be sponsored by State Farm. And so we're just really excited. One of the things my dad used to always say that the kids really needed something to do. So this is so special. It's also going to have an area that talks about my dad and just tell about his political career or his public service, I should say, career in Dallas County. So I'm really excited about it. And we're going to have a huge ribbon cutting next spring, and I will make sure that you all are on the list, everyone, the team and all.
Okay.
So we can come and celebrate. So I'm very excited about
that. Spring 2025?
Yes, spring 2025.
Okay. So it's been wonderful having you both on the show today. Your experiences remind me of my own journey here in Cedar Hill and on how the roots can inspire our leadership. Recently, Cedar Hill introduced a new transportation service through Star Transit, providing residents with convenient and reliable transportation options. Star Transit connects Cedar Hill to surrounding cities, including Kaufman County, Rockwall County, Mesquite, Balk Springs, Siegelville, Hutchins, and DeSoto, with discounted fares for our seniors, ADA-compliant vehicles, and free assistance for medical appointments. Star Transit has improved accessibility and strengthened connections across our region. I am proud to share some milestones that reflect Cedar Hill's forward thinking, spirit, and strong community values. This year, our city was honored with the Project of the Year Award from Keep Texas Beautiful for our one-of-a-kind library in a park. By combining the Traphine Hickman Library with the Signature Park, we have created a space where education, recreation, meet inspiration, connections, and innovation. I am also thrilled to celebrate the Maritime Council, which earned the Youth Organization of the Year Award, showcasing the incredible impact our young leaders are making. These achievements speak volumes about Cedar Hill's commitment to growth and excellence. This is my favorite part of the show. It gives me an opportunity to be able to interact with you about questions that were submitted online. Thank you for your participation. Look forward to hearing more from our listeners. This question came from Devin. I like your financial encouragement tip that you share at the end of your podcast. What is a practical thing you do frequently to build wealth that you recommend others to do? Well, I think the most simplest advice that I can provide is to consider to be able to invest in stocks. This will give you an opportunity for you to be able to invest. It's more easier now because you can do it through apps. I would also encourage you to maybe to seek an investment advisor if you have additional questions or trades that you want to be able to participate in. My second question that I received came from Allison. How do you stay informed about what's happening in different neighborhoods around the city? One thing that we talk about in our city is our mission, vision, and also our values. So one of our core values is also people and relationships. What we do in our city is we have different organizations in our neighborhoods, like our HOAs, our public improvement districts, our Crime Watch meetings within our neighborhoods. Both myself and our city council, we will attend different neighborhood meetings, maybe answer questions in real time, just engage with our citizens about what's going on, anything that is trending. This gives us an opportunity to go back maybe during our retreat or just when the council debriefs to be able to find out, is there anything that we need to be able to put into our budget to be able to improve, enhance, you know, our neighborhoods throughout the city. So thank you again for submitting those questions. Again, I want to hear from you. So please submit your questions. You can submit it on this link or you could be able to respond to this podcast and look forward to hearing from you in our future podcast. Thank you. So thank you for tuning in into the Elevate Effect, where we are raising the bar on community connections and innovations here in Cedar Hill. See you next time for more inspiring conversations and city happenings. Remember, the art is not about making money, but in keeping it. Save and invest wisely. Create generational wealth. Thank you. See you next time.